Hi, this is Christina Borgeson. My co-host Celia is out of the country right now, but I'm very pleased to introduce a very special guest today. His name is George Papadopoulos. He was the first person to plead guilty in connection with the Mueller investigation. He is a former advisor to President Trump and Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson. He's a graduate of the University College London. He's a past Hudson Institute analyst and career oil, gas, and policy consultant. Excuse me. He was sentenced to 14 days in jail, fined $9,500, and ordered to complete 200 hours of community service, allegedly for lying to the FBI. So, welcome, George.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. He's here with his lovely wife. Her name is Simone Mangiante Papadopoulos.
Hi.
And she has helped him. Hi. She has helped him a great deal through this ordeal. And his ordeal is outlined in a book that will light your hair on fire. It's called Deep State Target. So let's get right down to it. George, this whole nightmare began with a vision that you had for a policy having to do with energy as Trump's advisor. So could you take it from there and explain how your vision turned into a nightmare?
Sure. So before I joined both the Ben Carson and Trump campaigns, I was working at a think tank named the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C. It's probably one of the top three most prominent conservative think tanks in the country. And while I was working at that think tank, there was a different administration in charge, and that was the Obama administration. And I was working closely with personalities like Douglas Feith and Seth Cropsey, who essentially were very high-level Pentagon officials under the Reagan and Bush administration. And we were promoting an agenda in the Mediterranean and in the Middle East that was anathema to the Obama administration. What we were essentially trying to do was isolate Turkey, which we viewed as a very problematic actor and a country which does not hold American interests at heart, and support a new alliance that would align Greece, Cyprus, and Israel and promote the new regime under the Sisi administration in Egypt instead of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's a very easy way to summarize what we were trying to do without getting into the very complex specifics. The Obama administration, on the other hand, as we were promoting this agenda and the governments in that part of the world were listening to us for various conferences we were hosting, the prime ministers of those countries were hosting us to advise them on this new strategy and this new vision that we had. The Obama administration did not like that. They wanted to promote the Muslim Brotherhood in that part of the world. They wanted to promote the Turkish leadership. They wanted to make sure that the old regime stayed in power in Egypt. And essentially, Obama and Israel had a horrible relationship. That's very public. So what did this do? This put me under the spotlight. People in the Obama administration were keeping an eye on what this guy, George Papadopoulos, is really up to. Fast forward to 2015, after I'm leaving the Hudson Institute, I'm joining the two most renegade presidential campaigns in the country, Ben Carson,
right.
Who people sometimes don't remember was actually the only candidate to actually lead Trump in the polls in the beginning stages of that election campaign. And then obviously joining candidate Trump's campaign, which we know where that ended up. He ended up becoming the president.
Right.
So this target followed me onto both campaigns while I was on the Ben Carson campaign and then when I joined the Donald Trump campaign. And I give a lot of details in my book about the company I was working for in London, which had many connections to both the U.S. intelligence system, the FBI, the CIA, and British intelligence, and how that company set this entire operation in motion by introducing me to the professor, Joseph Mifsud.
You're Joseph Mifsud.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the London Center of International Law Practice.
Yes.
That didn't practice law.
Exactly. And my wife, I worked there as well at a different time, and I'm sure she could give her perspective on that as well.
George, Weren't you a little suspicious of that? Come on.
I was very suspicious, and that's why I was trying to leave. And that's why I was constantly asking to join the Trump campaign, and finally I was approved to join because I started to understand that something just wasn't adding up. I'm in this place because at that time, as I write in my book, I'm leaving the Hudson Institute. I'm 28 years old. I'm trying to figure out what my career path is going to be. I felt that I accomplished everything I wanted to in the energy business and then the policy world by basically having this agenda that we started at the Hudson Institute come to fruition. So I felt, what more do I really have to accomplish that I wanted? And that was to obviously join the White House. So when I got to London, I was considering, you know, maybe go off into practical consulting, policy consulting in Europe by using my ties I had in Washington. But I get to this company and it's filled with ex-Western diplomats, ex-Western intelligence types, some people with law degrees, but there's no law being practiced. I don't understand what I'm actually there to advise or consult
on. Where's the money to fund?
Where's the money coming from? And why am I being introduced to very high-level senior officials and diplomats from all around the world, yet I don't even understand what my full responsibilities entail? So I was constantly looking for a way out, and I finally got that way out when I joined the Donald Trump campaign. Now, as I explained in my book, because this organization was so connected to Western intelligence, and actually the head of the general counsel for the FBI, Arvinder Sambe, was a director at this group I was working at. I didn't know her connections to the FBI when she was the one who told me to go to Rome to meet Joseph Mifsud. And you could understand, and this is where why the origins of this investigation are so important to understand and to for people to read this book and understand why the New York Times fake story about me drinking in a bar with Alexander Downer is what set this thing off. Congressman Devin Nunes 2 days ago went public and stated that we now have evidence that the FBI had a full-scale investigation into the Trump campaign in late 2015, early 2016. I joined the campaign in March of 2016. I did not meet Alexander Downer until the summer of 2016, in the middle of an entire investigation into the Trump campaign. And I'm being essentially the FBI, in many ways, indirectly, was facilitating my meetings with these operatives who ended up later becoming the center of this massive conspiracy, this massive operation targeted towards Trump, his people, and was utilized to essentially handcuff him should he be elected president and almost destroy his presidency.
So basically you're describing an entrapment situation, right? But when exactly, when you think back, did it begin? I mean, was it Mifsud, you think, who was ground zero for your...
This is a very good question. Looking back, and this is using evidence that we now have, Joseph Mifsud has given some interviews publicly since my name has been released and since he's gone underground. No one can find him.
He's an intel asset, right?
Of course. He's an intel asset that no one can find now. And remember, Bob Mueller had lied to the world and characterized him as a Russian asset, which he was not. So Bob Mueller and the FBI essentially not only lied to the American public, they lied to a federal judge, and they lied to the FISA court about who this person was and why he was used as a pretext to spy on me and others in the campaign.
So you meet with Mifsud, and he's going to introduce you to, like, high-level Russians.
Yeah, so that was your original question about how things were set in motion and when I started to feel things were suspicious.
Because the other thing besides your vision, your toxic vision that they were trying to, you know, oh, God, Trump is going to do this. No. Mm. The other thing was that you were supposed to try and set up a meeting with Putin for Trump, which there's nothing illegal about meeting a head of state while you're running a presidential campaign, is there?
No, there's absolutely nothing illegal about it. And actually, I was the one that brokered the meeting between Trump and the Egyptian president in September at the UN General Assembly. That was part of my duties. My duties as a foreign policy advisor was to do three things. One, help write his foreign policy speeches, which I did. Introduce a candidate to foreign heads of state to make him look good. And three, to meet with foreign diplomats to better understand where the U.S. stood in the world at that time and help articulate global vision for the candidate that I was representing when he would talk about foreign policy. So, of course, there's absolutely nothing illegal about that. Now, about Mifsud, there was this fake narrative that I was sent to meet Mifsud on a hidden mission and that he was trying to introduce me to Russians to help the Trump campaign. There's nothing further than the truth from that. I was introduced to Joseph Mifsud by this woman named Arvinder Sambe, who the listeners right now can Google her, and she's in my book.
The FBI lady.
Yes. This is a woman who not only had a personal working relationship with Bob Mueller dating back to 9/11, okay? This is a little different than the New York Times narrative of the last 2 years, I know, and that's why it's probably quite shocking for most listeners. But not only did she have a personal relationship dating back to 9/11 with Bob Mueller, she was actually the general counsel for the FBI and the UK at the time when she decided to come pull me into her office and say, oh, you're joining the Trump campaign. That's what I heard, right? And I said, yeah. She said, well, before you go, why don't you go to Rome with our London Center for International Law Practice, where you'll go with this individual, Naji Idris, who was another director, and you'll meet interesting people there, and I'm sure they can help facilitate some contacts for you. And I said, that's amazing. It's kind of like a goodbye kiss or a goodbye gift for my old company, wishing me well on my new endeavor. But what it ended up being was
a poison drink,
a Trojan horse. And that's exactly what happened. This organization introduced me to Joseph Mifsud at a university in Rome, which trains CIA, FBI, and Italian intelligence officials. And this person, with all these various connections to the FBI, the CIA, Italian intelligence, British intelligence, decides that he's going to be my Russia middleman. And that's where this conspiracy became and started.
Well, in your book, you keep saying how you feel like you're not doing your job well because you can't seem to penetrate the upper echelons of the Russian government. You're trying to get that interview, that meeting with Putin, and all these characters keep coming in. So I just want you to, like, briefly, because, I mean, it's a cast of characters straight out of Central Casting. It really is. You know, Alexander Downer, he was he the walrus?
No, the walrus was Stephen Halper.
Stephen Halper. Okay. Okay, start with Alexander. Start bringing in these characters just in order of appearance.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to label them, explain the old narrative versus the new narrative.
Okay.
Because people are probably have been so, unfortunately,
indoctrinated by,
with
mainstream
fake stories. So Alexander Downer, he was the Australian ambassador to the UK. In the old fake story, he was simply a diplomat who I met with in a bar in London. And apparently I told him information about the Russians having Hillary's emails. He then passes this information along to the FBI and they start an investigation. That was the fake story.
Now, the fake story. Let's hear the real story.
That was the fake story. I was one of four witnesses invited to testify in front of the House Oversight Committee late last year before the Republicans lost the House, along with three other witnesses. And those other three were Jim Comey, Loretta Lynch, and Sally Yates. And people kept questioning, why is George Papadopoulos, one of four witnesses, along with those very high-profile names, into a testimony about FISA abuse? And the answer, frankly, is because Alexander Downer was brought up at that testimony. And people are...
How was he brought up? In what context?
Well, fortunately, now the testimony is public because somebody from Congress decided to make it public yesterday. And I think it wasn't a coincidence that they released it the day my book came out.
Right.
It's probably to amplify my assertions and contentions that I've been making for so long and my wife has been making for so long on TV. And Alexander Downer was not portrayed as a friendly diplomat passing along information that I might have revealed to him. He was projected to me as a spy sent on a mission to make contact with me on behalf of the previous administration and the previous CIA and FBI to sabotage me and, by extension, the Trump campaign. And that's exactly what seems to have happened. Alexander Downer, for everyone who wants to simply do a Google search of this person, will see that he was one of the Clintons' top allies abroad. He donated $25 million to the Clinton Foundation when he was the foreign minister of Australia. So this was not a random meeting. I actually foolishly notified the FBI and Bob Mueller about Alexander Downer because I had suspicions about him during my meeting that he was spying on me.
Oh.
And that's the reality. So what I expect is going to come out now about this entire situation is that Alexander Downer was no friendly diplomat passing along sensitive information, but he was actually there to spy on me and sabotage me, and by extension, do the bidding of both Clinton and the Obama administration at the time.
And yeah, because he kept pressing you on, you know, the Russians colluded with Trump. And you were like, what are you talking about?
All these people.
It was very aggressive.
All these bizarre characters right out of Central Casting, as you really rightly described, were just trying to put things out there that I had nothing to do with. It's like me sitting here and just speaking about something that makes no sense and waiting for your reaction of you saying, yeah, okay, and then recording you and using that out of context.
Right.
That's like the type of situation I found myself in with these characters. And fortunately, most of them have been exposed. I'm very happy now that the investigation is formally over. The report has been submitted, and they'll probably give ammunition now to both the president and his allies in Congress to go on the warpath.
Well, the problem they had, and I think that's why this whole thing got so big and complicated, was because they couldn't get you to say the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they couldn't get, so let's move. They kept trying, you know, they kept trying. So let's talk about Stefan Halper and Tobias Elwood.
Yes, okay. So Stefan Halper was the so-called Cambridge professor who invited me to London in an operation to spy on me and to basically try and entrap me with fake information. He pays me some money to learn my thoughts about energy in Israel, which, as I mentioned earlier, that's the real reason I had the crosshairs on me. And I get to London, where the FBI cannot operate out of, by the way. Only the CIA and British intelligence can operate on foreign soil.
Right.
The FBI operates domestically. So that was also a fake cover story that the FBI was running this guy. It was not. It was part of the British effort to spy on the Trump campaign and undermine the candidacy of Donald Trump. And that's part of what my book explains, is the British effort to really attack the campaign and influence the 2016 election. Because I have no idea what the Russians were up to, because I never met with them. So Stefan Halper invites me, and all of a sudden I'm going from discussing academic work to him trying to get me to admit something that I had nothing to do with, while he was wearing a wire.
Well, I just want to quote what he said to you about your vision. He goes, "Everything you said about Turkey is wrong. They are our ally. Your positions on the whole area are against U.S. intelligence assessment. Erdogan is an ally, a great buffer between the Iranians, the Saudis, ISIS, and Russia." And you said, "Right, because he wants to be Erdogan," meaning he wants to be more powerful than those regimes. And Halper said, "Turkey is too important to alienate." And then all of a sudden he pivots to, you know, hey, it's great that Russia is helping you in the campaign. So now he's trying to get you on the Russian stuff. You must have been so weirded out. And, you know, now he's into your, you know.
Well, put yourself in my position for a second. In front of you is a 400-pound man in his 70s.
The walrus.
Nicknamed the walrus. He's sweating profusely. He's belligerent. And his eyes are basically popped out of his head as he's trying to ask me the most bizarre, strange questions I've ever heard in my life.
And well, first he's telling you your vision is his nightmare and the nightmare of a lot of people.
That he's paying me to hear those ideas about it.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're working with the Russians and all that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he's the prime example of what I went through, and probably what this is. He's like the great example of what this entire hoax was about.
The biggest example, literally and figuratively. So, but here's the one that I find a little strange, okay? Is we're going to get to your falling in love and getting some real help finally. But the Charles to Will thing.
Very weird.
Weirded me out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So talk about that.
Okay. let's fast forward now to my first interview with the FBI. They're looking into ties with this guy, Sergey Milyon, who was a source of the dossier. And I explained to them I have nothing to do, basically, with this guy, Sergey. And they tell me, you know what, we really didn't want to talk about him. We have other questions.
And it turns out Sergey, by the way, is an asset of theirs, too, right?
That's what it looks like. That's what one of his associates told me during the inauguration. And then 4 days later, the FBI is at my house asking about him. And now he's disappeared off the face of the planet.
Of course. Well, they always do.
All these people just disappeared. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the FBI interviews me. Then they're harassing me. I've been told I have a FISA warrant on me in April of 2017. And then all of a sudden, Charles Tawil, this bizarre person, falls into my lap from heaven or hell, whichever one you want to believe he came from. And he's a very shady character. He makes no real sense. At that time, I was looking for work because I knew I wasn't going to be joining the administration because the FBI was harassing me.
Yeah, because you were,
because I was being
tainted now.
Yeah, tainted. So I said, okay, I have some contacts in the Middle East. Maybe this is a serious person. I mean, he was in his 60s. And I meet with him, and the conversation is basically about him analyzing who I am, understanding what my personality is, what my contacts are, and I tell him, we'll see what happens. Fast forward, I'm going to Europe, where I'm going on a vacation with my then-girlfriend, now wife Simona, and I'm in Mykonos, Greece, and Charles calls me, and he says, you know what, I'm going to fly and come see you. So he flies to see me in Greece, and he's talking about potentially working together on some ambiguous projects that he never quite clarified. And he said,
having to do with your expertise in energy, though?
That was the implication that I was hoping it would be. But he never made it clear. So then I tell him, okay, I'm busy now. Why don't you leave? And then he invites me to Israel after my holiday is done. And he begins to introduce me to bizarre people named Shiar Bell and others who run programs in which the FBI and the CIA are clients of that deal with social media manipulation. Exactly what the FBI said that the Russians were involved with, okay? So I'm sitting in a hotel room with a guy 5 months after the FBI was telling me that they're watching me due to my Israel ties, and he's framing me, meeting this person.
Well, he's offering you a bed full of money, too.
Yeah, and then an hour after that meeting that made no sense, he's like, why don't you come in my room? I have $10,000 in cash waiting for you. And I said to myself, okay, who's the Keystone cop who put this entrapment together? And that money actually became a key part of my arrest and my sentencing.
But before we go there, George, if I were your mom and I had heard that you had taken $10,000 off of bed, I would have smacked you on the back of the head. What were you thinking?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm glad my wife is here in the interview
to
with
hear
us.
This.
Well, actually, because I was really nervous, and I was texting her. She was my girlfriend at the time. I barely knew her.
Wait, what, Simona? Yeah. Come
and
to
I,
the...
And I said, give back this money right now. Why on earth did you take it? And he was intimidated by Charles Tawil. He didn't know what to think about it. He was not in his right mind.
That money ended up saving your butt, in a way.
I'll tell you why that money probably saved my butt in many ways. One, the FBI was looking for that money when I landed. And the only reason they'd be looking for money in a suitcase is because they planted it there. Two, they were very interested in retrieving that money back. I never gave that money back to them. That money's still in Greece, and I'm hoping that Congress examines it to see if it's marked. And if it's marked, which I believe it is, and quite frankly, many people in Congress believe it's marked as well, it has a tracing number, and the route and the source will be revealed. And if it's revealed, as I suspect, that the FBI was going around throwing money in and trapping members of Trump's transition and campaign like they did to me, and it's public knowledge, that's going to open up a whole new can of worms regarding malfeasance in the FBI and surveillance abuse?
Well, I'll tell you, entrapment is sort of an FBI staple,
mm-hmm.
and they often get away with it. So what makes you think that you're going to get any accountability?
Because I was smart enough to leave the money in a foreign country, which the FBI can't reach.
That's true. That was smart.
I left it in Greece, where it's currently in Greece. I've spoken to Congress about having the bills examined, and because I'm nervous about bringing it back to the U.S., they told me that you should take pictures of the bills.
Yes.
And send them to, I don't want to.
50 people.
Yeah, send it.
And friends, close friends.
And we want to examine them because we have a lot of suspicions about that money. And that came from Congress, not from me. So they requested that. So obviously, they must have heard something or learned something about this individual, Charles Towle, and even this $10,000 that they definitely want to understand a little bit more about.
So you take the bed of money, you give it to the Greek lawyer, you come home. The FBI is there to greet you at the airport. And then now you become a big, big part of the story, Simona, because he's now in the vortex. And you're the only person out there who knows what's going on. So could you pick it up from there?
Yes. I think you portrayed very well the situation I was in too. First of all, I didn't know George that well when he was arrested. I just spent the most beautiful holiday of my life. We had the most beautiful time in Greece. He mentioned to me in the case, so his interview with the FBI, and probably my understanding of the situation was flexible, because I come from a political background, I'm trained as a lawyer, so I was not scared, or I could understand what was going on. And mostly, I was the one on the other side of the phone when he was texting me about the issue with Charles Towle, that I had the unlucky occasion to meet in Mykonos. So I could profile this character, and he was extremely shady and smart, and you know, everything, somebody coming on an island to make a business proposal, and then...
So convenient, like you were, you know, somebody super important, and you know...
Somebody had their eye out for me.
Yeah, sure.
And to go to the extent of creating this scenario, this alternate universe to plant me in, somebody had it out.
Well, they had an out for Trump, and you happened to be a convenient, you know, they thought you were a convenient spear point or something.
I truly believe I was going to be the method to the end, the means to the ends. And the ends were to try and sully Trump and destroy his presidency. And fortunately, because of a mix of street smarts, Simona going public when I couldn't have a voice, and various independent journalists looking into my story, which never made sense from the mainstream perspective, effort fell under the weight of the facts.
Go ahead.
And then, so as you said, when the story became tricky is when he got after his arrest. I remember to say him goodbye at the airport in Athens. And since that moment, I was waiting for his call once landed in the United States. And I started receiving strange messages from George, like, hi, from Washington. I'm here to pick up my connection flight to Chicago. But I have the feeling that this guy in front of me in the shuttle train are going to interview me and stop me. And I said, George, you're paranoid. What are you talking about? I said, yes, I have the feeling they're going to stop me. After this message, silence.
Nothing.
For 1 week.
Oh, wow.
1 week of silence. I had this cousin reaching out to me on Facebook telling me George has been arrested. I can't tell you more. I remember... My mind was completely confused, so many questions. And of course, the first thing I thought were these $10,000. And I said, but these $10,000, they were supposed to be with this Greek lawyer in Athens. So maybe he lied to me, maybe was taking this money because
you're
I couldn't.
Wondering who you're hooked up with there.
Exactly.
Huh?
I said, okay, this is charming.
Right? Honestly.
I love this guy, but who's this guy? Right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, I start to make some questions. And I remember I had these friends of mine telling me, no, Simona, maybe, you know, I just had a vacation with you and I just doesn't want to reply to you anymore.
It's oh, like, no. Ghosting you.
And that was really, I mean, such a horrible.
That was terrible.
Because as you see in the book, you see the arrest, how violent it was. And yeah. I try and bring the readers into the room with me, you know, and these were just like maniacs.
Well, the thing that really struck me was how your lawyers were not really fighting for you ciento por ciento, as they say in Espanol.
Yeah.
And there is also a funny story about that. I mean, not funny, interesting.
Yeah.
When I knew he was arrested in Washington, I immediately contacted a very well-reputed lawyer in Washington, D.C., I used to be a trainee for, whose name is John Schmitz.
Uh-huh.
And I asked this person, look, my boyfriend has been arrested. I don't know what happened, but please help him. This guy could get in touch with George, and the FBI told him that he was not allowed to be represented by this specific power lawyer.
What?
Yes.
Why? Because this lawyer happened to be another coincidence that, you know, very difficult to explain, the brother of Joseph Schmitz, who also campaigned for Trump. That's where the FBI said, wait a minute, Simona is connected to George Schmitz.
Right.
She worked for Mifsud. Right. She's on holiday with Papadopoulos. She's a random Italian.
Yeah.
So how does this happen? And when I found myself, in occasion of my trip to Chicago, in the room of the FBI, putting on the table all these questions, I started to connect the dots for the first time. And I realized they were not interested in me as a source of information about George, but they were thinking that I was myself taking part of some sort of operation now. I was working with them or against them, or for which kind of intelligence. I was working with George. I was real his lover, or we were just having fun together. I mean, this was jumping in the movie.
Yeah.
But you're realizing your character being defined in front of you.
Right.
You're on the road, and you are connecting the dots of things that started to make sense. And that's where I remember I had the picture even clearer. And we started together this terrible purgatory and path toward the truth.
Right.
And
right.
I was his voice when he didn't have a voice. And I'm so honestly emotional and proud to read his book and see him talking loud. Because you have to be very brave to do that.
You do. And I don't, frankly, this, I don't think this fight is over. But I don't think it's over. I mean, these people are not nice people, George. You know that, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, they catch you. First of all, you've never seen the transcript of the lie or whatever that you told. You've never seen the transcripts that show. He said this at this time, and then he said this at that time, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I'm curious. Your lawyer never said, you got to show us what you're talking about here. And that's number one. And number two is when they come to you and they say, okay, we're going to charge you with lying to a federal agent. We're going to charge you. You have to, and this is what we're charging you with. The deal is you have to waive your right to appeal or challenge the sentencing. You can't seek restitution from the government's investigation. What? Why? And if he doesn't agree to this, they'll file even more charges against you. So they offer you this sort of semi-carrot. Okay, we'll settle with you. And if you don't settle, it's like then you're going to really get hit over the head. Didn't your lawyer say this is like something smells here?
I have to say that I was, I'm even considering suing my ex-lawyers, to be just quite frank with you.
That was a very good point.
My current counsel and I mean, I don't want to get into legal strategy, but let's just say that all options are on the table right now about the process that led me to pleading guilty that should have never happened in the first place.
Well, that was also part of the entrapment, in a sense, because if they could hold you up as, okay, this guy lied, and, you know, he was nefarious, then, you know, it creates this impression, oh, now we're getting somewhere with this nefariousness. There's some truth to what we're saying here, or what we're trying. But then in July 2016, Nunez releases a memo, right? What does that memo say? Do you remember?
The one about Alexander Downer?
It's the one that says that Peter Schrock opened the investigation into the Trump-Russia collusion based on information about you.
Yes, I think.
Not the Steele dossier.
Yes, but I think that has changed over the last 48 hours or so.
Really?
Because Devin Nunes, as I mentioned earlier, just yesterday or the day before, stated that the FBI had opened, they now have new information that the FBI opened an investigation into the Trump campaign in late 2015, early 2016. And I didn't meet this person, Alexander Downer, until the summer of 2016. That's the first point. The second point is Stephen Halper, the FBI CIA asset, which we now have learned, met with me in September of 2016. And he made contact with Carter Page in early July 2016. The official investigation, according to this, the old narrative, was July 31st. You cannot have an FBI CIA asset, Stephen Halper, reaching out to members of the Trump campaign like they did Carter Page in early July if the official launch date was July 31st. So I think that things have changed since that memo came out a couple of years ago.
So you were talking about connecting the dots.
Yeah.
Like, and could you talk about the various points that you made about connecting the dots, like why this happened to you?
As I stated, it all has started with my policy views on Israel and the Middle East and the energy sector and that part of the world, which was a new topic at the time that I really became a specialist in. I had a lot of access throughout my career, meeting with various players in that part of the world. And that, you know, it scared a lot of people in the Obama administration.
You know, I've got to ask you something, though.
Yeah.
Because one thing I don't agree with you is that you say, oh, the deep state is a democratic apparatus. I think that the deep state it's neither Democrat or Republican. There are Democrats and Republicans involved. And the deep state handles what I call the iron portfolio issues. Okay? And, like, I'm going to tell you frankly, I think that Doug Feith was a deep state guy in the Bush administration. I mean, he had the Office of Special Plans,
you know,
taking that raw intelligence, sending it up to, you know, okay? And me, trust me, Republican, Democrat, I don't care. I'm one of the few journalists, I think, maybe even the only journalist in this country. I don't care what wing the truth flies in on. That's all I care about. I'm not interested in political affiliation.
Yeah.
And what I see is Trump, a businessman, and I come from the morally repugnant elite of Haiti, okay, business people. They don't care about, you know, pop, whatever.
Yeah.
He comes in and says, we'll do business with everybody, and that's how we'll have peace in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who are invested there's a lot of money in the war. There's a lot of money in energy and oil. Let's face it, oil and gas, that's the game right there. It's called the great game.
Yes.
Okay? So I think Feith knew that your vision, I mean, Turkey, Interlink, we've got nukes there, whatever. I think Feith could have done you a solid and told you, George, that's not the vision to have. That vision is going to get you in trouble. I really feel like he had to have known.
Well, these guys definitely knew what I was up to because I was working with them closely on.
But why didn't they tell you? I mean, I looked at what you were saying. I was like, what? Those guys aren't going to go. I mean, you heard, you know, Sybil Edmonds' story.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just hired as an FBI translator, and she ran right into that turkey buzzsaw.
I ran into it, and there was definitely an entire apparatus defending Turkey, and I saw it, and I saw the pushback. I foreign diplomats were involved, spies were involved.
It just so happens yeah. that the Obama administration was in power, but the Iron Portfolio is an agenda that goes through the years, Democratic, Republican administrations, and everybody knows what it is. I think actually Project for a New American Century outlined it, Building America outlined it in a very articulate way, you know. So I wouldn't call it Democratic, but I would say yes, this deep state, because the problem with Trump is he was not deep state establishment. Anybody and that's what you're learning. He's getting on board now. He's starting to make moves that are starting to calm people down.
Yes. Well, you know? Look what the deep state attempted to do to him. To have him impeached over a fake story.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
what do you think they were going to do to a small guy like me or Michael Flynn?
Well, that's
we were meat for the grinder.
Oh, definitely cannon fodder. Definitely cannon fodder. I mean, that's the thing yeah. is what I'm saying is people went out of their minds.
Completely.
When Trump was elected.
Yes.
Because he wasn't part of the... You know, he wasn't part of the tribe. And here's this guy who's not part of the tribe who now is coming before the trough. The trough of, you know, where we're going to go, what wars. When he said he wanted to get out of Syria, yeah. people, you mm-hmm. know, freaked out. When he's trying to, he's not doing that anymore.
Yes.
And he's focusing on Iran now. He's doing all, he brought in John Bolton. So he's pacifying everybody now. Okay, so he'll be okay. But you, my friend... You, my friend, I worry for you, okay? I really worry for you because I think that you're not, this is not a machine that allows for accountability. And in order for you to get justice, you have to have accountability. So I'm not asking you about... God, I'm feeling like, you know, this is a whistleblower newsroom for a reason, because I've been in your situation, not at that level, but in the press arena, okay? And it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
And you've done the right thing. And you guys are going to go home, and you're still going to have to be confronting this in so many ways. And who knows who's watching you or doing what with you right now or trying to figure out how to contain George Papadopoulos, okay? But my question, thank God. You have a lawyer with you 24/7.
But still, the way they, it's very, you know, it's very stressful. They're attacking, they created like isolation around him. Many people were scared even to associate to him.
Oh, yes. Now, to associate
you have a
high cootie factor, my friend, for sure.
I've been only only 2 weeks ago I was at the Senate.
Yeah,
they're going. I mean, we are really still
in the
eye. I Congress on July, Senate a couple of weeks ago, FBI. It's very stressful, and we really hope to see the light.
What are you looking for? What are you looking actually for? What outcome is your best outcome?
My best outcome is to make sure that, first of all, I think being vocal is a defense shield for me and her right now. I saw the effort to silence me and how dangerous that really was, because I don't want to go to the extreme of saying I could have been killed and then no one would have known who I was or would have yeah. never even raised a finger. But now that I'm vocal, I think it's a lot harder to really silence me. That's why I'm just frantically getting everything out there so that it just goes where it's supposed to go. And regarding your question, what outcome I would like is for information that's been written in this book and in my congressional testimony to be utilized and put in the proper hands to open new investigations to find out why all this happened and who initiated this corrupt investigation into the candidate of for presidency in 2016, and why were members of his campaign illicitly spied on, entrapped, and put to jail for no reason.
Now, Trump recently said, right, he wants to know
Yes.
How this all started.
And that's why I'm so happy that he's actually taken that initiative.
Well, are you raising your hand in class and going, hey, 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 you want to talk to me? Are you trying to reach out to the administration?
Well, let's just say I don't believe in coincidence. And the reason I say that is because the day my book launched yesterday, Congress decided to release my testimony. They could have released it. I testified 6 months ago.
Wow.
They could have released it any moment. Between then and now, and they decided to release it when my book was released because I think my voice is getting louder. I have close to 100,000 followers on Twitter now. Serious people are listening to what I have to say. I've been told that even the White House follows my Twitter account. So that's been a powerful instrument for me. And I think my message is getting across loud and clear, especially on programs like this and on TV and in this book. And that's all I want. I just want this information to be out there. I'm not an investigator. I'm not a congressman. I'm not the president. It's not my job. My job has ended. I wanted to present the facts. I wanted to open new doors, raise new questions, and have the respective authorities answer them.
Are you a felon?
Technically, yes.
Well, what about that?
For me... professionally, it doesn't matter because I'm a businessman. I'm a private businessman, so I'm not a 9-to-5 kind of guy. I never have been. In terms of how it impacts me or what the consequences of that are, only a pardon could erase that. If that's what you're asking,
are you going for that?
My lawyers have formally applied for a pardon. I have nothing to do with it. They're my lawyers for a reason. They just think it's in my legal interest to file one and get one. I have no expectation for one. If Trump ends up giving me one, of course, I would accept it and I'd be honored for it. But
I do have an expectation for that. I made it very clear while unofficially I asked for a pardon to President Trump. I think George is serving his America, exposing something that is even bigger than him. And it's a sort of a moral reward toward all Americans to reward this courage.
You know, I would like to ask you to sort of meditate a little bit about the bigger picture that this has opened your eyes to and what it means for this country, what it means for the American citizens, and what can be done to fix it. That's a big question, I know.
It's a big question. But I think what this has shown us is, unfortunately, we can't trust the media like I thought we could. I thought that in this country, the media was an independent institution.
George, wait a second. Hold up.
I used the past tense thought.
What? No, no. But the reason why I say that, because, I came from Haiti. I went to Colombia. I, did all the right things, and I started working for the media, because this was the freest press in the world. I was brought up under Papa Doc, dictatorship, this and that. I was so shocked. I was shocked at what I experienced.
Yeah.
Because there's a thing, it's called official source reporting. So the media is an arm, in a sense. It's a business, okay? It's a business. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. I think you should make money if you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a business that's tied into deep state interests too, okay? So they're like the communications arm, because there was a thing called official source reporting that I ran into, because I was like, listen, my 7-year-old daughter, at the time when I first discovered it, my 7-year-old can go and stick a microphone under this one and this one and get opposite, and then, oop, there's your news package. Mm-hmm. That's not journalism. Journalism is being an investigation operation, is figuring out what the truth is, and not caring who's left, right, whatever, and telling the truth, okay? So why you can blame the media for being the messenger, but the messages are coming from the people who we pay, okay, to protect us. The government. And that's the real kick in the ass.
It is, and that's why I had to tell my story. I had to write Deep State Target. Simona had to go public and give a different version, because we saw what was happening. Actually, it's a good point you made about the media. I was having conversations with media outlets, even when I was obviously being sentenced, and most of them would not even listen to what I had to say. They were saying, no, we're not going to report this. We're not going to report about this. Who is this guy? Stefan Halper. What the heck is that? When I was saying I'm suspicious about him, for example. Oh, the FBI was questioning me about Israel. It wasn't about Russia. Oh, come on. It's about Russia. It has nothing to do with Israel. They had the info, most of them. I'm not going to name names right now. But they did not want to report it.
Oh.
They willfully decided to not report things that I told them. They intentionally stayed on a fake narrative, purposely, unpurposely. I don't know whether they were taking orders from above, which I assume, if you're correct, and I believe you're correct, about the media in many ways being an arm of various interests in this country. And I saw it with my own eyes, and it was terrifying. And just now, because I'm kicking and screaming and pretty much going wild all over the world with this book launch and Congress allying with me, that's why now even some of the mainstream media is forced to listen to me.
Yes.
And secondly, because there was no collusion, and because of the way I was propped up as Mr. Collusion himself, now people are
so ironic now, when you were trying so hard to get Putin.
Yeah. But now people, I think, are going to be forced to have to read this. I mean, there are even some journalists, some pseudo journalists, right, who have been writing these conspiracy collusion books. Of course, now I'm surprised if even their mother would buy their own book, let alone somebody with a credit card, and you know.
They put in place a disinformation campaign with truly reckless lies to destroy my credibility and affect George directly.
Oh, yeah.
And this was very low. Because I think no matter which agenda you're trying to push, you should hold to some sort of ethic. And I know employ a big word, but I mean...
You know, this is the thing that has always been so shocking to me. Is that's how I was reared. I was reared, listen, you got to be honest, and what goes around comes around, all that stuff, you know? And what happens is it becomes your weakness.
Mm-hmm. Totally true.
It becomes your weakness.
Totally
but
true.
If you give in to it, then you're no better than they are. So you are stuck in this vise, and you really, it's a life choice that you have to make. Mm-hmm. Are you going to do the straight and narrow and bite the bullets and be affected, you know, financially or this way or that way? I mean, luckily for you, you're a businessman. You know, you have, your family is in real estate. That's the best thing to be in, you know. And, you know, you do have your expertise in energy and stuff, and that's always going to be valuable. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people who do this are just... You know, and it's really hard when the advantage is to the team that has your tax, everybody's tax dollars to go after you.
They have unlimited time, unlimited resources, and they're going to turn the world upside down to get you if they want you. And that just happened to be what all of us had to endure simply for doing one thing, and that's helping Donald Trump become the president of the United States.
Well, I mean, and the fabric of civil society just unravels in these situations. And I think that's the wonderful thing about your book. It's called Deep State Target, How I Got Caught in the Crosshairs of the Plot to Bring Down President Trump. And it's an amazing book.
Thank you very much.
Very honest. And I certainly appreciate what you've done, and I wish you the best. I really do. I hope that this comes out well for you, but I think you might still have a fight ahead of you.
I am going to make a prediction. I think we have just entered into round two, and round two is going to result in an entire new investigation into many claims that I make in my book. And part of the information that I provided in this book and in my congressional testimony is going to be used as ammunition by Trump's allies to go after the real perpetrators of this treason against this country, which was the hoax behind this Russia collusion investigation.
So you think Trump's going to gear up with who? With Barr? Well, I guess Barr is not.
You have Barr. You have Horowitz doing an investigation right now. You have I forget the other guy. There's another Hubbard as well. Yeah. There are different investigations ongoing right now, and Congress, members of Congress, Lindsey Graham, Devin Nunes, others, and even the president himself are saying, well, it's our turn now. We're going to assure that this never happens again, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And when it comes out, when the truth comes out, a lot of it is going to entail treasonous acts by the former administration and the involvement of the UK and Australia. And that's something that I describe in my book, and it's going to shock the world. It really is.
Just but my like question that. Is, these treasonous acts, once exposed, is there going to be any accountability? There's never accountability.
If there wouldn't be any accountability, this is my prediction, I could be wrong. If there wasn't going to be accountability, I don't think the president would even bother making statements the way he is, and Congress wouldn't even want to relaunch investigations unless they're just posturing.
Well, my question is, the reason why I ask that is because Trump is beholden to that deep state I was talking about. And
Trump is beholden to that deep state in many ways, but he also wants to make sure that he's not attacked again in 2020.
Oh, no, he's not. I don't think he's going to be attacked because he's starting to behave. Okay. He's starting to behave. So I don't think I actually think he'll probably get reelected. I'm not sure. I don't know. Are you going to go for trying to work on his campaign again?
No. I'm
will apply.
Is that a donezo deal for you?
You know what? In many ways, I feel like I've been working for Trump the last 3 years.
I think so. You campaigned for him very much.
I think I've campaigned for him already.
You have by
writing this book.
Yeah,
and I wish him all the luck in the world. and I think he's going to win without my help this time.
Well, you guys have been wonderful.
Thank you so much.
I wish you the best of luck. I really do.
Thank you so much.
I think the public will appreciate this.
We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye.